It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Access of Easy, where we'll be talking about data breaching and overreaching. This is AOE number 378, and today I'm joined by Mark Chaktovich. How are you, Mark?
Good, Len. How's it going?
Not too bad. Do I have to introduce who you are? Everybody should be aware who you are, Mark.
I was trying to change it before. I'd already come in here, and I can't change my title. I wanted to change it to EasyDNS PHB, the pointy-haired boss from the Dilbert cartoon. That's who I am nowadays.
And see, mine is blank. I love Dilbert. Reading it, there was actually the cartoon on TV that I never got into. I'm not sure if you ended up seeing that.
Yeah, that was, the cartoon wasn't that great, but you know, the Dilbert cartoon was quite classic, and even some of Scott Adams' books are pretty good. They're really good reads, actually. I got that latest one, Reprogram Your Brain or something. That was pretty good. Just came out last year, I think.
Mark, are you a Far Side guy?
Oh, God. I loved Far Side back in the day. Big time.
Same here. Yeah, I could just tell. But great stuff there.
Yeah.
I think it's best we just dive right into it, because people are probably wanting to hear some of the stories that we have for them. But before we go any further, Mark, there's a quote that I'm going to have to bring up because, well, somebody got it. And the quote was, guilt, the gift that keeps on giving. And that was by Irma Bombeck. And Joe got it. So congratulations to him. So he's able to get the reward for that, which is, of course, 1 month of service on EasyDNS.
Well, technically, it's a renewal, right? So if you want to renew one of your domains, you get it for the year. If you're on what, if you want to renew web hosting or whatever, you get one of that. But yeah.
So the new quote, though, I don't know who's a buy, I could guess, but it is, you must learn to be disliked or you'll find yourself stuck in a prison of other people's desires.
Yeah, I know who that is because I picked it this week.
So. Oh, is it one of the A-team, by the way, or am I wrong?
No. I it's a well-known personality and I cobbled it off of Twitter. So, but I didn't remark on it. So if you go digging into my Twitter feed, you get no edge on who that is.
And for people that are wondering, if you know who it is, no searching up the answer. You have to post it at the bottom of the blog post in the comments section where you're going to get, well, like as Mark mentioned, free domain renewal or hosting on EasyDNS. So certainly it's worth your while to take a stab at it. Mark, we got 7 stories, 2 late additions to this.
Is it 7? Yeah, like just 5 stories and then 2 things we were talking about before we started rolling that we should probably mention today.
Absolutely. And we'll start off with this Matrix botnet. And it's a new threat actor that's, you know, or through, and a threat actor that's been causing some folks some grief out there because it's aggressively exploiting some vulnerabilities that are present in these misconfigured Internet of Thing devices, the IoT devices. And what they're doing by taking advantage and aggressively exploiting them, they're building a massive botnet capable of launching large-scale DDoS attacks. And the campaign has primarily targeted IP addresses located in China and Japan, but also it's going to Argentina, Brazil, Egypt, India, United States. There's a whole bunch of countries out there that the campaign is targeting. So the botnet, it leverages a variety of techniques to get access to compromise these devices, and it's including something like brute force attacks against either weak or default credentials. And it's also exploiting known vulnerabilities out there that have already been previously discovered in the firmware or the software. And once it's been compromised, they're able to enroll themselves into the botnet and become part of the distributed army. I love that stuff. And there's, you know, there's a lot of these devices out there. Some millions and millions of these devices that are at risk that could potentially be used for this DDoS attack. And really, it just goes to show you people out there that are buying stuff. And this happens now during Christmas. A lot of people are buying these Internet of Things devices. You're just getting them, buying them, and plugging them in without thinking very much about configuring them, nor are they doing any research to see if there is a security threat that's associated with these devices? So it's incumbent on you as the end user, A, to do some research, but B, also, once you do get these devices, to make sure they're properly configured. If not, there's going to be potentially somebody taking control of it and using it for their own nefarious purposes. So I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that, Mark.
Oh, well, there's a lot here. So this botnet is based on the original, I read it here somewhere, is based on the original Mirai malware. So in the DNS business, this is near and dear to our hearts, not really, but the Mirai botnet sort of laid waste against DNS providers back in, you know, the mid 2015 to 2018 period, I think. There was a massive attack that took down one of our competitors, actually Dynect, got knocked off the air completely. And it was quite the mess. It wasn't that big of a DOS attack either. But the point was, all of these IoT devices all over the world have like these really crappy default passwords most of the time. So the first thing you should do when you get like a D-Link camera or something like that is change the default password. And I remember in a really early issue of Access of Easy writing about a California law that actually forced IoT manufacturers, device manufacturers, to have strong default passwords before they even ship the device. And I remember writing, you know, I'm not really a big government interference guy, but as far as laws go, that was a pretty good one, because if the industry is going to be super lazy and cause all this damage by just letting their own products being looped into these botnets, it was a pretty good law to pass there in California. And it's a good best practice to just have strong passwords set on these devices, because most people don't change them, and a lot of them are accessible to the outside internet.
In terms of a DDoS attack, if you are subjected to one, what's the course of action in order to have this rectified? Because I've never been the recipient of one, but I'm sure you must have some information as to, if you are the victim, what's the next step?
Well, I mean, you go into some sort of DDoS mitigation process or another, depending on the kind of attack, right? If it's against your website, then you use like some kind of web firewall, right? If it's against your DNS servers, you know, most of the DNS companies today, EasyDNS and all the other ones, I mean, we all spend more money than we'd like to on DOS mitigation. That's just always on, right? We'd rather not have to, but you have to. In fact, we have redundant DDoS providers because, you know, there's even problems if you're using one DDoS provider and there's a problem there, which has happened in the past. We won't name names, Cloudflare, and, you know, half the internet goes off the air. So even then we were using them for DDoS mitigation, and we were unaffected when they had that, big outage, because we had like backup DDoS mitigation. So, one way or another, I mean, you're usually using some professional scrubbing service to just, you know, that's just got, or you're using your own hardware in your data center. If you have hardware in your data center, you still have to be able to have a large enough, big enough transit to absorb the attack. Like, even if your firewalls can scrub the attack, if they just fill up your pipes anyway, still doesn't do you any good. So it's an arms race, and it's escalating. And some of the numbers I've seen, like I remember in 2003, EasyDNS got hit with our first DOS attack before we even knew what a DOS attack was. It was our first outage after 5 years of 100% uptime. And that was, it was like a 20 gig attack, which is nothing now, right? And then the largest, you know, there was like a 20 terabyte attack, you know, in 2012 or something like that. And that was like a world record setting. And then the NTP reflection attack, which was a couple of years ago, was like 300 terabytes a second, right?
Wow.
And I think I just saw, and you know, I talked about Cloudflare's outage. I'll talk about what they can do. I mean, I think I saw something that they mitigated like a 500 terabyte attack like in 2024. I mean, it's just insane the amount of bandwidth that's out there and that you can loop together and just throw at a target.
I'm assuming that this is all through ClearNet. They're not using something like Tor to have that type of bandwidth.
You wouldn't. Yeah, I don't think you can actually attack through Tor because Tor, like, it would just slow you down too much. So it's got to come over the ClearNet. And there's actually, I mean, there's ways you could really reduce this. There's like a protocol called, I might get the number wrong, BCP38, which basically is a networking protocol which says, you know, you've got all these different networks on the internet abutting each other, right? And you should be able, you know, there's a relatively simple protocol that says if you're taking a packet from outside your network that is, you know, its source header says it's from inside your network or it's otherwise spoofed, you should drop that packet. But there's not a lot of people implement it because it's sort of a game theory thing where it costs you money to implement it, but you don't see the benefits. Other people see the benefits. And so it's not a thing. And I find myself, you know, with a little bit of cognitive dissonance because I'm an anarcho-capitalist and I hate the government, but it's like, you know, there should be a law that transit providers turn on BCP 38, right? But that's, you know, we're not there. And so there's a lot of, you know, traffic sloshing around the internet, just permanent DOS attacks on some targets. And you just have to mitigate it.
I don't want to spend too much time. I have one last question. Does sure. IP version 6 mitigate any attacks and slow it down, or is it just...
No, it actually adds another attack vector, right? And in fact, it's better. Funny because I was out having drinks once. I wasn't drinking because I don't drink, but, you know, I was drinking something with one of the founders of a DDoS mitigation company out of California. He was up for a conference or something, and we were, like, having, you know, cocktails or whatever. And I remember he was sitting across the table from me and he said, and he had this kind of almost daydream expression on his face. And he's like, you know, Mark, someday all of these DOS attacks are going to happen over IPv6. And he just kind of got this look on his face and his eyes lit up and he said, it's going to be great. Yeah. Like, great for business, I guess, if you're in the DDoS mitigation business. But it just like he just the nerd in him was just supercharged by this prospect that kind of made my knees kind of a little weak thinking about it.
Oh, man. Okay. I appreciate you satisfying all my questions for me. Obviously, this is awesome. Let's move on to this Google story. We touched on it last week. Let's keep going on it because this is the landmark decision by a federal judge, and they've ordered Google to break up its monopoly of its internet search. And this is following an antitrust lawsuit that was brought on by the U.S. Department of Justice. And this could have some real problems for Google in the future. Google, the claim was they've engaged in anti-competitive practices to maintain its dominant position in the search engine field. There's nobody else that does it as good as Google. You may try and look for another one, but we all roads go back to Google when you're searching for something. And the practices they've been employing include paying device manufacturers to make Google search its default engine, such as, like, for example, paying Apple billions and billions of dollars annually to get this done. So under this proposed breakup that's been thrown around there, Google's going to be asked or being forced to sell its Chrome browser and impose restrictions on its Android operating system. Android has the majority of the market share worldwide, not in North America. I think Apple still has that foothold there, but worldwide, Android is number one just because of how easy it is to use, how cheap it's used. So it's just, you know, if you're in a developing nation, it's harder to get your hands on a Apple phone versus a crappy Android phone. And so the goal of this whole thing is to make a more competitive marketplace and to help other competing search engines out there get a foothold in the market and become a competitor to Google and also browsers as well. So this is still waiting for this final ruling to come down and what's going to happen. But really also to take into consideration is the AI implications here, because Gemini, which is Google's ChatGPT version, they're really trying to get that and also all different parts of AI involved. And I'm sure getting that information from stuff like their search engine and Chrome is going to increase the ability to make their AI better. By taking that away from them, that's going to be a competitive advantage they're going to lose moving forward. So too bad for Google. They've had this monopoly for a very long time. It sucks that there's government intervention for this, but it is what it is. If they got to play the game, they got to pay the price.
They had a good run. I'm actually a little surprised that this happened. You know, truth be told, I'm surprised this happened under a Biden administration.
Yeah.
Because Google is very sympathetic to that side of the aisle. But, you know, here we are. Is this a done deal, or is this still like, are they going to appeal it? And does it, or is this like, I find it hard to believe that this is actually going to go through, because in some ways I think Google is more powerful than the United States government. You know, it's part of the whole network state thesis, I think. But if it goes through, you know, again, cognitive dissonance. I don't think it'd be a bad thing for the internet at large, because they are super huge. They do have a monopoly. What's going to happen on the Apple side of the equation? Like, can you imagine the vacuum there with taking Google out as the default search thing? Like, is some other company like Bing going to get the deal, or perfect player Apple enters the chat and comes out with their own search engine, which was something that's been rumored for a bunch of years?
I'm surprised they maybe haven't they yet.
Did. Sorry, I just had that, like, as I finished saying, like, maybe because we already know the other thing is search is being disrupted by AI, right?
Yes.
I don't even use Google anymore most of the time. You know, I have my various AI agents and Perplexity and all this stuff, and Apple is like the latest. There, each iteration of iOS is coming out with more AI just baked into the cake. So, will there even be a default search engine as we understood it until a year ago, or will they just say, "Well, now we're just gonna like"? Now we're just going to pack in some AI bot that's going to do all your searches for you.
Yeah. So to go back, Google is saying they're going to be appealing this decision. So that's their MO. And you're right. I mean, with the AI, which moving forward, I've said that it's just a better search, better way of searching thing. You still have to verify, you know, when you ask for something from.
Oh, boy, do you ever.
Yeah, so exactly that. But it does make things a lot easier. You just simply ask a question and it spits out an answer rather than kind of Googling it and then going through all the various websites to find it. It's much quicker to go through one of these AI options that's available to us. And yeah, you're right. I mean, that's something that potentially could really disrupt this whole search engine fiasco. But still, where does this stuff troll from? Normally it just goes to Google and trolls it, maybe Reddit or whatever, but I don't know. There's a lot that it's going to have to play out in the next little while. And yeah, definitely Apple, it gives them an opportunity to build something, a search engine. But then if they do that, and if it's a default search engine on all iPhones, doesn't it just create the same problem that it's going to be addressed in the future?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And you're 100% right. Why is this being done under Biden administration, given how favorable they have been to Team Biden? Look at YouTube and how much stuff was scrubbed out of there, and YouTube searches that were
reordered. Look at the election searches, right? Like it was insane. It was like, okay, like, you know,
yeah,
fair and balanced. I don't think so, but
well, let's move on to this rom-com thing, and this is. This is a sophisticated threat actor, and it's got links to Russian state-sponsored hacking groups, and this is Romcom. Like Glenn, that name, by the way.
Glenn, you didn't rate Matrix.
It's good. You know what? Let me think about it. Matrix Botnet, 1.5.
Okay, rom-com.
I like rom-com. I want to give it 3.5. Okay. I like that for some reason. Do you want to give any marks, or we just
want No. You're the thread actor grader in my
book. Oh, Joey and myself. And don't just plug me into this alone. It's a combination effort between he and I. But anyways, this Russian state-sponsored hacking group, this rom-com, they've been leveraging critical zero-day vulnerabilities in both Firefox, which I use, and Windows to execute highly targeted cyber attacks. And this vulnerabilities, I can give you the CVE numbers. It's 240-9680 and 2024-49039. So if you want to check it out, there they are.
Yeah, they're in the show notes. You can always go to the blog and we like link to them there. So yeah.
And so they're compromise the victim systems without user interaction. Those are very dangerous, and it's making it very difficult to detect or even provide any protection or prevention against this. It's extremely challenging. So these are silently exploiting these vulnerabilities, and it's deploying a custom built backdoor known as the ROMCOM RAT. And it's a remote access control over these infected systems. It gives them the ability to do data extraction, lateral movement, persistent presence, and also malicious activity. And it's primarily targeting end users in Europe and North America, and also government agencies, critical infrastructure organizations, and private companies. So all it boils down to is, again, you have to be very diligent if you have any system to make sure that you have the latest updates on your system, or else you potentially could be impacted by these zero-day vulnerabilities. My system on a daily checks for updates, and it applies them. And if yours can do the same thing, I would recommend you do it as well.
The thing that's scary about this is it's 0 day, which means like there isn't a fix for it yet. It's zero click as well, which means
no user intervention.
Yeah. So you just hit the wrong website in your browser and boom, you're infected. So, or you could be infected, right? I mean, like people like us are probably a little more on the paranoid side. So we have shields up all over the place, but those zero click attacks are like super dangerous, and it's just like it's like walking through a back alley on the internet. You don't want to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So
yeah, you should obviously keep a firewall up, a trusty firewall. Maybe periodically do some spoofing on your network to see if there's any suspicious traffic that's going in or out. Another thing is try not to have anything sensitive on a computer that you're using. I know that's difficult to do, but it's, you know, if you could have another computer where you actually have sensitive information and try not to use that computer all that much, except for just updating it periodically. I mean, that's probably a better course of action. But other than that, I don't know what else you could do. Maybe cross your fingers and hope for the best as well. So let's talk about this bootkitty thing, and it's impacting the UEFI bootkits. And these, if you're a Linux user, you'll understand what this is. And that's what it's targeting. And it's a malicious malware that's infecting the boot process. And it maintains persistent access even after the system has been booted or even reinstalled. And it works by targeting the firmware of the UEFI. And it's also disabling security measures and preloading malicious code. And what it's doing from all this, if it ends up on your Linux computer, well, there's data that could be stolen from it. It could also compromise your system, and it could be a persistent backdoor to allow people to get access to your computer. So the way to mitigate anything moving forward is, of course, just like the last story, is keep your stuff updated at all times. Strong password is recommended. Don't reuse the same old stuff and do something that's just very easy to brute force in. You have to enable also the UEFI secure boot. This is in the BIOS. You could simply do it by just going to your BIOS and just enabling it. I think it's on by default for most devices, but if it's not, you want to do that. But also try not to plug in any USB, like here's one of my hands, and for instance, just don't plug it in willy-nilly. Make sure that it's a trusted device. Also use security software. So personally, I like to use... I have a firewall UFW. I like that, but that's not going to provide total protection. Another thing you can't do is stay informed. So BootKitty, it's causing a real problem for some Linux users. Not for me, because I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not plugging in crap that shouldn't be plugged in. And I have strong passwords. My boot, secure boot is enabled in my BIOS. So do the same things I'm mentioning here and follow my lead.
But I think the higher level takeaway is that, like, a lot of people, myself included, I mean, we've spent the big chunk of our computing careers just thinking that Linux systems didn't have these problems, right? Like, this is like Windows people have to deal with viruses, right? Not Linux or even Mac to a lesser degree, which is BSD under the hood. But we've heard there's been the odd Linux or BSD or Mac OS X virus over the years, certainly not nearly as many as Windows, right? You could radically improve the security of the entire internet if you eliminated Windows, but that will never happen. But that this is happening on Linux systems is, like a wake-up call for a lot of people.
So Linux, like it's like any other operating system, there's holes in it. And it just gives you, as the end user, the ability to control more of it. But also, because so few people use it, and primarily people that probably have privacy in mind, it doesn't make sense for a threat actor to try to make a program to go against it. It's not a big... you're throwing a net and just capturing very small fish. It's easier to go after Windows, where a lot of people use it. And you have a lot of ill-informed users that are using it, and you potentially get a lot more out of it. I'm not trying to justify it, but just, that's just the way it is. Eventually, as the market share of Linux goes up, the amount of threats going against it is also going to be going up as well.
We should probably differentiate something, though, because somebody might be listening saying, what are you talking about? Linux systems typically aren't affected by this stuff, because we've heard of stuff like Heartbleed and all of these other panics that you hear about on the internet. And you and Joey were covering one that we did not that long ago about like open source library that was trojaned and sort of that infected. So those are all software libraries that run on the Linux system, but this is in the bootloader of the Linux, like it's baked into the actual internals of the Linux system itself, which is rare. Right. But like software and libraries and open source packages that get sort of, trojaned or rootkitted or whatever, that does happen. And it sort of goes across all architectures, just to sort of clarify that.
And if one could gain access to anyone's Linux system, you could simply just load a module, and that module could do anything at that point, and it's game on.
God, Len, I was like, I lost days on this, maybe if you add it all up. So I'm like going through my computer and I find this like login item in my Mac, like OS X, right? That just like it had some weird name and there was nothing to it. And I spent like, what the fuck is this? Right. And I'm like totally like freaked out without, trying to let on that I'm completely freaked out. And I finally figured out that it was from this decentralized VPN system that I was trying out, right? Called Mask, M-A-S-Q. And it's like, huge sigh of relief. And I'm like, I actually, because I was talking to one of the devs on Twitter beforehand, I said, man, you guys scared the hell out of me. Like, put something in this loader that explains what the hell it is, because I'm like, you freaked me out completely. But,
Educate me, Mark. OS X, is that still the current version, or have they upgraded it? Is there a new version?
It's what is it now? I mean,
I have no clue. I'm not a Mac user, but I've heard OS X, that was a big thing, and I'm not sure how long ago, but I remember just everybody, a lot of hype around it. I'm wondering if that's still.
Yeah, it's still OS X. It's like it's always like upgrading. The latest is Sequoia. Yeah.
Okay. See, I'm not a Mac user, so I'm not from. I hear these terms and buzzwords, but
yeah.
Let's talk about this Microlease thing, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And this is the prominent UK telematics provider, and they're experiencing a significant cyber attack just last month, October 2024. And a lot of their service has been disrupted. It's also impacting various sectors, including transportation and logistics. And the attack, as I mentioned, compromised a lot of their network. And so critical systems like vehicle tracking and panic alarms are now impacted. So courier services, prison van operations, there's a lot of funny things that are just tied to this that is being impacted. So the ransomware group called SafePay, it almost sounds like a crap coin.
I know. It's like,
yeah, doesn't it? Like, it sounds like one of those.
It's altcoins. Like, oh yeah, I want to install that on my crypto wallet because it sounds like
safe. I'm all in. It's going to moon. Well, SafePay, they're claiming responsibility for the attack, and it almost reminds me of ISIS back in the day. And they're saying they have exfiltrated 1.2 terabytes of data from Microlease's system. And what are they going to do with this? Obviously, they're going to hold it ransom and try to get as much out of it. But yeah, like, this is pretty crappy stuff if you're impacted by it. And this is seems to be a big play moving forward. These attackers, they find a honeypot. They find a way in, get the information, in this case, 1.2 terabytes, and then they hold it hostage and try to get a big payday at the end. Like, the people that hold on to this information, be it hospitals, insurance providers, or in this case, the telematics provider, they got to do a better job at securing their data. Clearly, they haven't been doing a very good job up until now. So, bad for them.
Yeah, I was, just as you were reading that, and every time you and Joey report on one of these, and even, you know, when I was writing most of these in the early days, it was always like, well, you can tell who wasn't backing up, right? Like, you got to have backups. But it just occurred to me, you know, knock wood, God forbid, it's like, okay, what if the whole system got encrypted tomorrow? I'm like, okay, how long would it take to do a complete restore, even if you had backups, right? So you could, some of these companies that it's like, oh, they've been down for 2 days, I guess they didn't have backups. Well, maybe they did have backups, but there's so much stuff that you have to restore. We don't know that side of the story. I guess companies aren't really super willing to say, well, it's taking us so long because we have no backups and we have to rebuild our system from scratch. or we do have backups, but there's like 50 million terabytes of it and it's taking a long time, right? You have to pull it off of Amazon Glacier or something. If it's that bad, I mean, that's gonna take you a long time, right?
Here I am. Sorry.
For a second. I don't know.
Yeah, that was the other way around. Yeah, I'm having some internet connection problems. Yeah. Clearly, I'm angering the wrong people. Yes. Well, do you want to talk about this Denmark outage?
Yeah, so just before we coordinated tonight's session, and it's not even in the...
I could queue it up for you. I could give you...
Yeah, actually, and I think what I'll do is I'll have the team add an item on it tomorrow before we mail it, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just today. There's an outage. A significant part of their train service has been knocked out in Denmark. Yeah. Yes. And so it's several lines have been impacted. And they're saying that the service would be restored by 6 p.m. today. And there's also, like, in conjunction with this, they're also, from what I gather, they're transitioning their rail system from analog to digital rail systems, signaling systems. And
this is
highlighting the challenges that go along with it. So a lot of lines that were impacted in what they call Jutland. I don't know how to pronounce this for people in Denmark. My apologies. So yeah, these systems, like a lot of the mass transits, they are heavily reliant on connectivity. And if there's any sort of disruption, they're down and out. And people which are reliant to get to and from work, or maybe something going to the hospital or whatever, it impacts them dramatically, and it could cause widespread chaos. So I'm looking at this, and it's a small outage that only took a few hours before we were able to rectify it or claim.
No, but this, so the whole transit outage was because of the mobile outage, which was the whole country. The whole,
that's a mobile network out. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole TDC net went down, and part of the sort of knock-on effects was the transit system. Denmark's biggest telecom provider, TDC, suffers major service outage. People can't make calls, including 112 emergency, which I guess is their version of 911.
Yeah.
Says a failed software update. I tend to believe companies when they say that, because I've been on the wrong end of a few software updates in my day, and it happens, you know, it definitely happens.
What are the odds you're running Microsoft Windows? There was a failed update.
Yeah, maybe. what was the one that just happened? That was the CrowdStrike.
Oh, yeah.
CrowdStrike. And they hosed everybody downstream from them, you know? Yeah.
So this story, when I'm looking at it, and it shows how vulnerable society can be. It's just a few dominoes have to fall, and it's widespread chaos and borderline panic could ensue.
Yeah.
Look at us here in Canada. How fragile is, for instance, the electricity transit system where you're generating a power, OPG, Ontario Power Generation, creates the energy of like maybe a nuclear plant, for instance. And then that energy is transported great distances to just about everywhere. But those systems that transport energy, it's not that hard to knock it out. And by knocking it out, you could cripple a whole bunch of people, not have power. It's not like it's the 1990s where nobody had cell phones at the time. Everybody still, you know, we kept our doors unlocked, and a lot of, you know, it's a different time. You know, everybody's reliant on communication. And if that gets knocked out somehow, just by simply knocking out, for example, power, it's just chaos at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and the last one, I can't believe we didn't have it in. So although we will probably get it added tomorrow somehow before it gets mailed out. But the Australian government has passed a social media ban for kids under 16.
Yep. Their Senate decided to pass this. And if you're under the age of 16, you're shut out, at least in Australia, from using the social media
service. So how are they enforcing this? Like, what is the mechanism to... They have infrastructure. Otherwise, this is meaningless.
If I were to hazard a guess, they would probably ask for age verification for every one of these websites, and you'd have to enter in some age that satisfactory to them. I other than that, I don't know. And how complicit are stuff like X going to be and stuff like that? I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, if I'm running some website, actually, I am running some website. It's called EasyDNS, right? And we get requests from foreign governments all the time saying, we need you to do this to comply with this law. And we're like, that's not going to happen. Like, we're not doing that. We don't actually even respond. You know, we keep them for posterity, but, and we're not even like an adult site or anything like that, but it's like, we are not going to enforce laws in Cucamonga for whatever reason you've got going. Cause like, what's the technical ability to do? I mean, I'll give you a real example. I might even have the letter here somewhere from the head of the police in the Ukraine that just sent us a letter that said, take down all the Russian sites. Like, that was kind of like what it said. There was no criteria on selection, targeting, enforcement, like nothing. And I'm like, well, what if some of these sites that are Russians who are protesting the invasion of Ukraine? What if some of these sites are like Russian exiles who are against Putin? Like, there's nothing in here to sort of impose any kind of due process framework on it, let alone a technical, like, how do you want us to select all the Russians in our database? Like, it's just, we didn't even respond to that. It's like, just ignore this, but you get
a golden opportunity.
Yeah.
You could have asked him for a fraction of Zelensky's fortune.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You'd be retired, man. If well, what an opportunity. But yeah, that just goes to highlight, like, what sort of pull does the Australian government have over all these websites, all these companies out there, like Meta, X?
Do you think X is going to comply with this? And then there's going to be like some sites are like, how are you even going to decide what is a social media site? Like if it's a popular WordPress blog, is that a social media site if it allows comments? Like
that's a good thought. Good point. I think that what they've done here, they just push this out there as a way to show, look, we're trying to do our best to protect kids, but it wasn't well thought out, and nor can it ever be fully enforced. It's just, it's almost a half-assed approach, in my opinion. But
did you see that meme? It wasn't in response to the Australian one. I think it might have been in response to Canadian, like Bill C-63 or the either the online harms or the TikTok ban or something. But it's the scene from Scarface when they're sort of like talking to each other on the phone and laughing their asses off, and the money counter is spinning, and the caption is like, you know, VPN providers in Australia.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's going to make a lot of VPNs.
Yeah.
Quite wealthy because of that. So it's just too bad the Australian dollar's tanking as a result. It's just not. So these VPNs that are going to be collecting Aussie dollars, it's going to suck for them.
Hey, it's almost on par with Canadian dollar. What are you talking about? They're like the same amount of worthlessness.
Do you remember we were back in like the high 50s back in earlier this century, like 2021? Sorry,
2021. It used to be 2-1 on the Aussie dollar. Yeah. Like it used to be 2 Aussie dollars to 1 Canadian dollar. Now we're pretty close to par.
Yeah.
There was once a time when the Canadian dollar was stronger than the US dollar.
It's twice in the past 15 years.
Yeah.
And it went, it went sideways. Mark, we've done it. I appreciate you coming in to sub in for Joey, who is, well, that's his last week. He's going to be subbing out. He's coming back on.
Oh, he's back on? Okay.
From what I gather, yeah, he's not on CBP, but he's on Axis of Easy, so.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on.
And thanks to Praveen for filling in the other shows. He did a great job too. So
he's great. Yeah, we have another person in the stable if we have to tap.
Yeah, exactly. So the roster is expanding. I like that. So
exactly. With that, take care, and we'll be back at this next week.
See ya.